Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing? I mean, nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grief process. You know, with roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, that's about a third of the population. That means that everyone probably knows someone caring for a loved one. Join Dave and his guests now and every Wednesday at noon Pacific time as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. So find a comfortable place to relax, kick up your feet, and prepare to feel better and to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to get you through today and every day so you can survive your tomorrows. But not just survive, but to live life fully and abundantly. Yes, you heard me right. That is a possible goal to achieve. And now, here's your host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, a big LA welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the Worldwide Blog Talk Radio Network, as well as iTunes and YouTube and five other platforms. And all our recorded pod and video casts are saved for your later on-demand listening pleasure. And our goal here is to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. And we have an exciting, exciting, exciting show planned for you today. I feel like we already did the show because we had so much fun just talking before the show. And we're going to try to recreate all that fun again. My lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space. This is going to be a tough time where I can pronounce my vowels here. Say hello, Adrian.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Yeah. All right. Today we will be interviewing author Tren Rose Saley and Deborah Schuss, and we'll be discussing Creativity Generates Love and Success, Connecting in the Land of Dementia. So stay tuned. You will not want to miss this show. I'm your host, Dave Nassani, as I said, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the three things we know about caregivers is that they are caring and selfless and sacrificial. But they have this tiny little problem. Tiny. Actually, it's not tiny. They're very prone to burnout because they tend to put everyone else's needs above their own. We can learn something from the airlines, including United, when they drag you off the plane because they overbook. Because they tell us, they do something, right? They tell us that in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first. Be like that. Because if you're traveling with a loved one, they want you to put your mask on before you attempt to help your loved one with their mask. And why do they tell us that? It sounds so selfish. It sounds like the most selfish thing a parent can do to their kid, right? I mean, if you can imagine the plane going down, everyone's screaming, your bundle of joy gasping for breath, whose mask are you going to put on first, right? I can't even imagine a caregiver putting their mask on first because caregivers just aren't built that way. They aren't hardwired that way. But they have to be. They have to change because the airlines know so well that if you don't put your needs above the needs of your loved ones, you will most likely black out, and then you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. That's a lot of anys. Now, we also talk about grief and loss here and the devastating effects it can have on us. Anytime we suffer a loss, like a girlfriend, our freedom, our health, our home, our bankruptcy, our divorce, anything, it takes us into this thing called the grief process. And it could take days, weeks, months, years to get through it. And it may not, you may never get through it. But everyone is different. And unfortunately, we don't want you to be one of those ones who never get over it. Okay. We believe that you can get over it. The sooner the better. I know everyone is different, but there's only one way to get out of the grief process. You can't ignore it. You got to go through it. Okay. You can't deny it. Can't go around it. Can't go over it. Can't go under it. You got to go through it. And hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss to get through it if you happen to feel like you're stuck somewhere. And I do want to take this time now to thank my last week's guest, author Lisa Hirsch, my mom, my hero, talking about Alzheimer's and the right to live or die. You know, Adrian, this is the third show in a row where we're talking about Alzheimer's. We don't plan it that way. I don't like to plan it that way, but it just kind of happened that way.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever, you know, we do Alzheimer's posts, it seems like we get very few responses. It almost makes you think, well, I guess there aren't many Alzheimer's caregivers out there. But I think it's just the opposite.
Tons.
But I think for whatever reason, they're just so overwhelmed that very few of them have the organization or the time to actually, you know, come online and get support. So I think it's a good thing that we had three in a row, because mm-hmm. I'm dealing with some Alzheimer's issues myself with my mother-in-law, but we'll talk about that later. Anyway, you can hear that interview and this one and all of our interviews right on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com or davethecaregivers.com. And there's so many other places to get it as well, YouTube, iTunes, and a lot of other places that you can see on our website if it's more convenient. And we're so excited that our long-awaited third book is in the process of finally being published. I just got the final draft of the book cover, and so you just need to decide you want A or B, and pre-purchasing will begin shortly. I know all of you struggle when to say yes and when to say no to your loved ones. I struggle. you'll want to be the first ones to pre-order this copy. It's called It's My Life Too, When to Say Yes and When to Say No in Reclaiming Your Caregiver Sanity. It shows you how to put your needs first so that you can then meet your loved one's needs. This is all we talk about here. And remember, it's your life too. So if you go down, you all go down. As they say in Tennessee, y'all go down. All right, enough of that. Tren and Deborah, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview today. I'm so excited to have you both on.
So glad to be here.
Another time, girl. Come on now, take turns. Just raise your hand if you want to talk.
We both wore blue shirts. We had no idea. We live in completely different parts of the country. I just want to say that. We were proud blue sisters, and delightful. Glad to be here.
This is navy blue, and we are on the Blue Jeans app, and
that's
I'm sure
right.
Adrian has blue eyes or something.
No, I have blue jeans.
Jeans, all right. Elton John would be proud.
He should.
Well, I always like to say, girls, take a minute or two and introduce yourself separately. Don't talk at the same time. I like to ask my guests just who is Tren and Deborah, and why was she put on this planet? Deborah, you go first.
All right. Well, I'm speaking to you from Kansas City, Missouri, as a former family care partner. My mother had dementia, and she was the person who got me started on this journey. I was so appreciating what you were saying, Dave, at the beginning about going through the grief process and learning how to take care of yourself. And I certainly did that when I was with my mom on her journey. Once I got through my grief process, I decided I was going to make the most of this and look for the gifts and blessings in the journey. And that was the subject of my first book I wrote, which is Love in the Land of Dementia, Finding Hope in the Caregiver's Journey. And then I got to experience dementia with my partner Ron's two parents. So that kept me really interested in this subject of, as you said, taking care of yourself, but also how do you stay connected in a meaningful way with a person through their dementia journey? And that inspired my second book, which is Connecting in the Land of Dementia, Creative Activities to Explore Together. And that speaks to two things. One, the thing that you just mentioned is how do we take care of ourselves as caregivers during this? And all the activities in there gathered from 70 experts across the globe are designed to do together. So you're renewing your soul and your spirit as caregivers while you're connecting with the person who's living with dementia. So this is a subject that is of deep interest to me and has really informed my life.
Wow, so eloquently said. You're a poet and you don't know it.
Is a poet.
Thank you.
So maybe she does know it. Tren, your turn.
My turn. Well, I'm so glad to have met Deborah. I've been doing this work for many years as an author, but before that as a practitioner and caregiver full-time in a professional settings as well as private homes. And finding Deborah feels like a breath of fresh air and a connection that I value. That same wish to support caregivers in creating life around the person that they're caring for such that it feeds them as well as the person they're caring for, much like that model of the having enough oxygen for yourself to save the person next to you, whatever age they are, whatever the need is, you have to have your own cup filled. So as an Alzheimer's caregiver, I have experienced personally in professional settings and seeing family members and friends starting to ask me for support and advice on their journeys, that we absolutely have to fill.
Oh, everything froze
up.
It must be on. How could they both freeze? Oh, we lost.
Deborah's not frozen.
I'm here.
Oh, I'm so thawed. It was Ken who froze. All right. Well, we heard enough of her. We'll just move on.
Okay.
So let me ask some questions. Deborah, why is it so important to be connected as a caregiver or a person living with dementia? What's so essential about that connection?
Well, when you're caring for someone you love, it's natural that you're going to want to have a relationship with them no matter what they're going through. And as you've just mentioned, you know, you said you were going through things with your mother-in-law, a person changes. And so you want to travel to where they are so you can keep your connection even though your relationship changes. That was a really hard thing for me with my mom. I kept trying to drag her back to reality. And once I got, that doesn't work. And once I got over that and I decided I'm going to go where she is. And if she thinks I'm her sister, I'm going to be her sister for a moment. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to journey with her and not resist her. It really deepened and improved our relationship. For me, one of the very exciting things and one of the reasons I got interested in writing Connecting in the Land of Dementia is learning about the role that creativity and imagination continue to play, even when the rational brain isn't functioning as well. So even if you can't remember how to drive to the grocery store or all your grandchildren's name, you still are brimming with creativity. Mm-hmm. And in fact, sometimes your defenses are down and you're more creative.
More.
So the arts, as Trin will tell us, music, drawing, gardening, cooking, all these creative things that oftentimes people don't have time for in their busy everyday lives are ways to stay connected with people who are living with dementia. And I want to just say one fun thing about Trin. I found her on the internet when I was searching for experts for my book. And I fell in love with her book and I fell in love with her when I talked to her. But I constantly am using ideas that she shared with me. And one of them, just today, I had a phone call with a friend of mine who's living with dementia. She's far away. And she didn't quite know who I was when I called. So I used some of Trin's ideas about affirming someone and reminding them of what they've accomplished. And, you know, I said, you are a musician and you are a writer and you are an amazing teacher. And it was so wonderful to feel her expanding with that.
Yeah, almost like hearing it for the first time. Oh, really?
Well, yes. Yeah. And, you know, as you said earlier when we were talking, Dave, people really don't get that much praise and affirmation. And so when you're living with dementia or when you're a caregiver, it's a precious thing. You know, you want to hear that you matter in the world.
And sometimes we have to give it to ourselves, and that's okay. You know, pat yourself on the back. You did a good job. You know, I have a pastor at church, and every time he says a great line, he says, "Great preaching, Pastor Jared," and he high fives himself, you know. And then he does it, you know, he's not going to wait for someone to do it. He knows it was good. He's going to give it to himself.
Yeah.
And caregivers should do that. Don't you agree,
absolutely
Trent?
They absolutely should. I concur with everything Deborah said. It's absolutely true. We deserve affirmation.
Back.
All of us, thanks. We all deserve that affirmation, and especially when we can't remember, we're reminded that it fills the cup of everybody around them. You know, it can be so easy to simply focus on, well, you know, they forgot this again, or they didn't think that, or they did remember this wrong. That's a waste of air space to talk like that about the person that you love, that you value, that has been a productive member of society and enjoyed their life and did a lot for other people. When they're in the state where they can't do that anymore, it's now the friends and family and associate job to bring a person's life back to them and feature them and remind them of who they are.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you know, I'm the caregiver's caregiver. I've been doing this for 21 years. I should be the expert. I should know what I'm doing. I dealt with my mother and her dementia, you know, pretty successfully, and she passed on. And now I'm dealing with my mother-in-law who has dementia, and I'm not doing very well because it's totally different. You would think all dementia is the same. It is totally, totally different. And I know what I'm supposed to do, and I can't do it because she's not in a good place. She's living alone because she fired her care. She didn't fire her caregiver. Her caregiver quit because, you know, when you call the police on your caregiver, the one you're supposed to be trusting, accusing them of stealing, after a while, the caregiver says, you know, even great devoted caregivers, they just can't emotionally continue with someone who's just been abusive like that. So now she's all alone. She has a caregiver come in maybe 2 or 3 hours a day, which is enough. That means 21 hours a day she's alone. And, you know, she was cooking the other day, which she shouldn't be cooking. We tell her don't cook. Mm-hmm. And someone answered the door because she answered an ad about getting a security system because, you know, everybody breaks into her house every single day stealing all her stuff. Sure. So she needs a security system. And so they're talking at the door. The food's still on the fire. Oh. And all of a sudden smoke's coming out of the kitchen. And he says, "Are you cooking something?" She goes, "No."
Oh, God.
But there's smoke coming out of the kitchen. And intelligently enough, he says, "Let's go in the kitchen and see."
Let's do something.
And he turned off the fire. And so, you know, he didn't even want to sell her a security system because he says, you know, this woman doesn't, she's like in La La Land. And yet she can have a 2, 3, 4, 5 hour conversation with you and be totally rational. You'd never think there was a thing wrong with this woman. And this morning, I don't want to say too much because the show's about you, but this is a great question that I know others might have. She opened the garage door at midnight and left it open all night long and refuses to believe that she did it. Somebody else must have done it. And I told her, well, we have video cameras. You're the only one in the house. So it's hard for me to, because the advice is don't be confrontational. Don't be argumentative. You know, just agree, you know, make her comfortable in the set. But she's in a bad place and we got to get her out of this place. She doesn't want to leave. She needs to be in a facility. Yeah. So it's hard to be all of those wonderful supportive things. It's easy if she was in a facility because now we know she's safe.
Yes.
So I'm in this limbo land. How do we get her out of here and in where she belongs? We may have to do it with her kicking and screaming. So let's go there for a moment.
Hopefully you don't have
either
to
one
kick
of you.
Don't kick and scream, okay?
She'd be the one kicking and screaming.
I'm just reminding you, Dave, don't be the one who's doing the kicking and screaming. Because that makes all the difference. I mean, the simple advice to just have her transition from her home to a new place, one is to keep her out of the whole scene while it's happening. Mm-hmm. And secondly, set up
take this one step one step at a time. How do we do that?
I would think that
just literally prepare.
Go ahead, Adrian, you got an idea.
I mean, to me, I know with my Aunt Sylvia, they got her room ready, they brought the things in that were important for her to have there.
You've said it. Yeah.
Things that she would never, you know, really notice were missing. And then she would be brought into a place that sort of felt like home because there were some of her important things there. And they literally did have to sneak her in, like saying they were taking her out to lunch. But once she got there and she saw the view from the room and all the wonderful things that the kids had done, it was more pleasant.
That's going to be a rough day because she, like I said, I don't know what kind of dementia she has, but she's like a normal person who has these lapses in memory because there's a hole in her memory. And she might not be, you know, I was looking at the stages, you know, like moderate to decline, you know, I forgot the different stages. Well, what are they, Deborah?
Well, I was going to say, one of the things we did with Ron's mom, who didn't want to leave her home, is we had help from other people. And I think that's so important as caregivers to remember, you do not have to do this yourself. And sometimes your family members do not want to listen to you, but sometimes they will listen to somebody else. So we got our Alzheimer's Association involved. We had a friend.
Like an intervention.
Right. So, and also we had somebody from the facility where we were hoping to move her come over to meet her so she'd have a familiar face when she was there. Mm-hmm. So I think we got transformed when we stopped trying to make it happen ourselves because we felt very unsuccessful, like you were describing, Dave. We'd been through this with my mom, just like each of us. We're all different. And the more you can, we got enormous help from the Alzheimer's Association, just understanding the quote normality of the situation. And I love what you guys said about preparing the room. We did the same thing and it really helped.
It did help. I have one question. By having an intermediary from, let's say, the Alzheimer's Association come in and help you make this happen, does that take the onus of the blame on the children at some point?
Well,
it certainly can.
Yeah, you know, every family is so different. Trin, did you want to talk to that?
Just, it certainly can. And the idea being, as Adrienne said, if you prepare the space ahead of time, she's landing in a spot that feels familiar. So, Dave, what I was starting to say about keeping her out of the fray is to have her going out of the home. Hey, it's the sister or a friend or one of those nice neighbors that you had mentioned before that can just take her out for lunch and she's going out. She's having a great time as best she can. I'm not sure how her experience is of just being out with a friend, but the new landing spot is her new spot. And it's already set up with her favorite blanket and her favorite painting and her favorite items that make it feel very much like home. My husband's mother-in-law, we were very concerned about her transition into this kind of situation, and it went better than we were so surprised. She had to go into the hospital for a reason, and then the new home was ready, and she just literally went in and it was acclimated immediately. There was no struggle. It happened to be that foil was a real need, but it was a perfect transition. So you don't want your mother-in-law to be there while people are moving stuff around, keep her out of that complicated part. But when she lands in the new spot, it's beautiful. As Adrienne said, it's already set up. Wow, this feels great. This feels like a resort. This is my new place. Wow. Can be that. It can be that flow.
Yeah, but the problem is she's in denial about dementia or Alzheimer's. She thinks she's perfectly fine. She thinks her memory's perfectly fine. She's made up these delusions in her head to explain why the video says that the garage door opened and she didn't do it, you know, and she's always got an excuse.
Yeah. I have conspiracy theories.
Are these people that you're describing, did they know they had dementia? My mother knew she had it. She accepted it.
I think sometimes, too, in front of the family, people feel ashamed when they can't remember things, when they don't understand things, or sometimes if like a compassionate social worker comes in and just wants to learn more about the person, that they can talk more freely. And I know that's what happens with my mother-in-law, Molly, is that nothing was wrong with her, and she was very proud of her memory. She had an extraordinary memory. But for us, she didn't want to admit anything. But when she started talking to somebody else who maybe didn't have any baggage with her like we did, she was able to say, well, I'm not quite remembering that as well. And it helped reduce the shame and discomfort she was feeling. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be different for every person, but it's just an idea to get another person or persons involved with you.
Yeah. You know, the same issue with my mother. She was living in assisted living. Independent living she was living. And she really was time for her to move on. And you can never find a good time to do that. A good, you know, it's always going to cause some problems. And unfortunately, but this is the case, it took a fall and a fractured hip. Fortunately, it wasn't even a hip, it was a pelvis, because once the hip goes, I think you're in trouble. And so she went to the hospital, and then she never made it back to her place. That's the easiest way to do it, because now there's a reason to leave the house. Okay, I fractured my pelvis, I've got to go to the hospital. That I'm almost praying that something happens, not too serious, but that we can use that as a reason or an excuse. Because, I mean, she almost burned the house down. She goes out a lot following the dog without her walker. She could very easily fall. And I pray that, let there be that kind of a reason. Because now it's not my fault. Hey, I told you not to go outside. You fell down. Now you're in the hospital. And then that's the time. If she ever goes to the hospital, she's never going back to that house. I will make sure of that.
But you can create something that's less intrusive, and it may take a little bit of time to work with her energy about it, but it's the idea of saying, hey, you know, you've been complaining about troubles, and maybe there is somebody bothering your house. Maybe we should do something about that, and sort of get her on board. She's
make
already
you
saying
safe.
The words.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
I want to make sure you're okay. The words that I always use with a person with dementia of any kind is, I am here to make sure you get what you need. And it could be for anything. It could be as simple as going into the bathroom. It could be as complicated as moving someone out of their home. But it's like, I'm your ally. I'm going to make sure nobody's breaking into your house at night. I'm going to make sure nobody's cooking weird stuff in your kitchen. Boy, that is annoying.
So that's a great idea. I love
that. Together. Let's be partners in this. You are her partner. You're her ally. So whatever the steps are that need to create a new space for her, it's that you're with her. Boy, that's hard stuff happening to you. We're going to work on this together.
I'm going to need to get more involved. See, I'm just the son-in-law. Her son is in charge. He's got the legal authority, but he's in Minnesota. He comes out when he can. And her niece is closest, you know, just maybe 5 or 10 minutes away. But she is got some problems with her ankle healing, and her parents are in terrible condition. So she's already a caregiver. Her plate's already full. Her parents have to come first, and then her aunt. But there's just not much time for her to do the things. You know, she usually goes to the doctors with her. But it's really, really tough. It's so common for caregivers. Their plates are like overflowing.
Is Charlene involved in this at all? Your mother-in-law.
Well, you know, Charlene is nonverbal, and you know, she doesn't like to travel to her mother's very much, because it's not a pleasant experience.
Pleasant
for Charlene.
Experience.
You know, she has to just listen to her mother on and on and on, and repeating stories 4 or 5 times.
Right.
She just called her for her birthday and spoke for her for like over an hour. And then yesterday, 4 days later, she wanted her phone number because I was at work. And she spoke to her another 2 hours, wishing her a happy birthday, telling her the same stories about how she was breached, you know, with her, just the same stories. So, you know, takes a lot of patience.
Yeah.
And even Charlene, you know, who's handicapped herself, it takes her a lot of patience to tolerate her mother. But
you've got the dream
team. You can only
team,
do
right?
so much. She's in a wheelchair, you know.
Got the dream team. Give her our number. We'll talk with her. We'll take shifts, and we'll be supportive, and fly us out. We'll take care of it. We'll take care of it. Yeah.
How sweet of you.
You know, we're here for you, and I'm sorry that it's hard for everybody, and we can get it done.
Well, let's take a break, and we'll talk about some other things when we get back, so don't go away.
One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, is about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resemble that of both a Martha Stewart and a Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech-impaired and paralyzed on the right side. Who am I? My name is David. I've had the privilege of being Charlene's husband since 1975. We had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that culminated in our marriage a year later. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left. Finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn, she started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought us all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, our love then produced Rebecca Elizabeth. We had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships, is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope, that everything happens for a reason, and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone who meets her. Her accomplishments since her stroke are very impressive, often making us normal people look like whiners and complainers. So pick up your copy of One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships today. You won't be disappointed. Just hear what best-selling author Lynn Barrington has to say about it. If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story told from the heart. It's inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light. How about the reaction of 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel Christian music, Andre Crouch? Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror, as the Bible states. You'll be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through. Available everywhere. But if you purchase your copy directly from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com, Charlene and David will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy!
And we're back with Adrian Gruberg, Deborah Schuss, and Tren Rose. And girls, I want to talk to you about your book. You are both connected to a book, yes?
Well, that's right.
So let's talk about that.
That's how I met Tren. I was doing research for my book, Connecting in the Land of Dementia, Creative Activities to Explore Together. And so, and this is where I was searching for people who believed in the humanity of those who are living with dementia and had a positive outlook and were creative in their approach. And I found Tren, and she is a part of the book and has been a part of many blogs and articles I've written since. And so for me, the experience of getting to talk to Tren and other people in this field of creativity and dementia really widened my outlook on how much is possible when you're living with this disease. And so from stories of painting to stories of how people created an ocean setting in their backyard, even though they were miles away from the seashore, they had the feel of the seashore so you could feel nature and feel connected to your favorite places, to the power of music. All of these, to me, are really important ways to stay connected. I wanted to go back to one of the things we were talking about earlier, which is, you know, how do you communicate and how do you support somebody when they're going through memory loss and the emotions that follow that with that for some people. And I love this phrase of a cognitive ramp. That was something that Dr. Cameron Camp and Dr. Alan Power have both used. And it's the idea of you wouldn't take a person who is in a wheelchair and try to make them climb up a flight of stairs. And the same way with someone who's living with dementia, when they are having memory issues, you don't want to put them on the spot to remember something. You want to give them these cognitive ramps that can support them in being the best that they can be. And for me, it's what we all want, no matter what we're going through. We want to be able to live our highest and most meaningful lives. And so that's, to me, what this conversation is all about, is taking care of the caregivers, but also giving the person living with dementia the support they need to have fun and enjoyment, relationships, all those things.
Awesome. Trent?
I love that language of cognitive ramp. I know Alan Powers' work, and I hadn't heard that concept, but that's what I've done in my work for many years as a full-time caregiver, both in private homes and in care communities. And I decided I needed to write a book when I was moving away from Colorado, where I was primarily doing that work for many years, to help empower caregivers in their own homes as well as professionals in their settings. And my book is called 15 Minutes of Fame: One Photo Does Wonders to Bring You Both Back to Solid Ground. It's cognitive ramps, right? It's music and storytelling and photos that bring a person's life back to them, remind them of their careers, the things they're proud of, the hobbies they've done. These are all things that sometimes a caregiver will pack it all away and say, well, they don't know anymore. They don't remember. And the point I've been trying to bring to the world is, bring it back out, put out that guitar, put out those things that they publish, put out those quilts, and show them what they have done and who they are. Not only is it valuable to the person who may not just remember with dementia, but it's powerful for the caregiver who is not just getting stuck in common, boring, everyday things and saying, you know, you were some lawyer in your day. You made this quilt for me when I was 10, and it's beautiful, and look at all these stitches, and look at and feel it, and really have a tactile sense of the joy of what that person truly is. You know, we all can have layers that get in the way of our common everyday experiences. If I had the flu, I couldn't do my work. You know how that feels when you just want to be lying down, and instead you're supposed to be running the show. It can't be done. So I kind of use that example as, a person with dementia may feel like they're walking through mud and they can't process anymore. So it's my job to walk up to them and say, hey, you designed bathing suits in your career. And and this was a real person that I knew. That's what she did. And she was like, wow, that's who I really am. Thank you for remembering. Then there's a real authentic connection that I've made with that person. And then she trusts me, and we can then do what we need to do. Hey, you know, we're having a great breakfast out in the hall. You're welcome to come. It's actually planned for you. You've got a seat and everything. You know, engage them back into real life instead of getting stuck in a corner. And in my career, way before I did this as a professional job, I was singing in retirement homes and would go in and see everybody lined up quietly asleep, not interested, not engaged. By the end of 45 minutes of music, they're awake, they're connecting, they're singing, they're shouting out requests. It's a totally different room. And that's been very precious to me to see that. And I value that, bringing a person's life back to them, bringing their music, bringing the photos of great opportunities in their lives, and bringing the stories of their lives.
I want to ask a quick question. What is it about music? Because it really seems to be one thing that touches a lot of people with Alzheimer's and dementia. What is it about music that makes that connection?
Well, think of yourself, Adrian, when you were a kid and a song comes on the radio, or there's equipment. I know I'm way behind technologically. There's way more available for people, iPods and things, where you just bing, you hear that song and you feel like you're 11 years old again, and you remember your best friend, and you remember where you were, and you remember
the lyrics.
Remember the lyrics. When I was 5 years old in California, it was I remember when rock was young. So when I hear that song, I am 5 years old, running down the path with my friend. I'm there. So
yeah,
when a person has dementia and there's layers in the way of them just being able to process things, it just cuts through all that. They remember the best thing that ever happened. And it's their song and it's their memory. And they just are transported back to that moment. And it's a really good moment. So that's music. I mean, I can say more, but that's the first thing to say.
Okay.
I wanted to mention the Music and Memory program that Dan Cohen put together. And this is a national program that you can just go to their website and learn about. It's what Trent so beautifully described. You take a song that's a favorite song and you fill an iPod shuffle with a series of these playlist songs. And then for people who have trouble concentrating, you put on headphones and they listen to their songs. And this can be something really wonderful for somebody who's feeling anxious or confused. They can listen by themselves, give the caregiver a break. They can listen with the caregiver. And there's a beautiful movie called Alive Inside that documents this program. It's very inspiring. And I always love to recommend that we all put together our playlist, because I got to talk to Dan about a year ago and he said, every encounter, you're going to the grocery store, you're waiting in the doctor's office, you're going to the hospital, it's better when you have your music there to help you feel better.
Yep.
I wanted to ask about how
do you manage expectations around participation in creative endeavors? Explain that.
Well, I'll start with that. I think you are in the flow when you put together a creative endeavor. So to me, the goal is to issue the invitation, let's draw a picture together, or let's cook something together with the ingredients here, and set it out, no stress, no time limit, and just enjoy what happens. And try to use that as a catalyst for conversation, ask open-ended questions that have no right or wrong answer, so that you can just flow with the conversation and just connect through whatever that activity is. Friend, what do
well
you
said.
About that?
Yeah.
Asking the wrong questions is bad. Go down dead-end streets.
Right, exactly. I love the example you used about cooking, Deborah, and setting it up. There was a woman in Pennsylvania who was caring for her mom, and she would put out all the vegetables that had come out of the garden. And then she learned to put on the cooking show on the TV while the daughter was making the meal. She would hand her mother some things to do, but the mother literally thought that she had prepared the meal by the end. She said, well, I made this wonderful meal, didn't I? And her daughter was like, yeah, you did. So you're not expecting to make sure she did it all, but you want her to feel as if she did and participate in the way that she can. I do an art class with people with dementia, and it's not about did they finish the project or did they sing every song or did they tell a story. Well, I'm going to sing a song, I'm going to tell a story, and I'm going to provide some art for them to engage with. And I have nursing psych students who volunteer for the class, and they're really learning about how to be human, how to be really connecting rather than I'm just going to take your blood pressure now. Like, be a friend, can make an authentic connection. And I say to them, This is a three-part class. It's music, stories, and art. And if you don't even make art, but you find that they're telling you their life story because of the way we've engaged them, that's success. Enjoy the conversation. Let them tell the story. So you're not saying, did you come out with the perfect piece of art by the end? And we sign off. No, it's about, did they enjoy the experience and participate the way they can?
Mm-hmm. So how do you set up those things in your communities that advocate, for creativity and connection, which is a great idea.
I do an art and music session at an adult day program, which is a great thing for people to realize that can happen, where a person will go out for the day to a center and spend time there while you are still working or caring for your family, or simply having a break for yourself in your full-time caregiving. Take a person to an adult day center. This one that I work at is just wonderful, full of engagement and music and fun. So I've been doing that class there for many years now. And as I say, as I describe the class, we're singing, we're telling stories, we're engaged, we're talking about picnic, we're talking about 4th of July, we're talking about anything that reminds people of their lives. And it's a terrific time for everybody involved, including these nursing students who are getting that there are people first, they're a person before the disease, and to remember that and call out the strengths.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't take advantage of their local senior centers. We have one in our community, and I used to sing during lunchtime, you know, all the standards, and they used to love it. Of course, they're all deaf. They can't hear how bad my voice is, but they loved it. Nobody's throwing tomatoes or
that's in your favor, yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, and they usually always have an Alzheimer's daycare, you know, and they do fun things with them, and music is a big part of that.
Yeah. I love what Trin was describing, and it's also something, you know, a caregiver can do at home. They can do a project, again, with low expectations, but the idea is just to invite out creativity. Mm-hmm. One of the things we've been doing in our community here in Kansas City is Ron and I have just taken laughter yoga leader training. And so laughter yoga is no down dogs or traditional yoga poses, but it's intentional laughter, it's gestures and breathing. And the idea is when you laugh for 10 or 20 minutes, it boosts your immune system, it reduces stress, it releases endorphins, so you feel happy. So we have started doing laughter classes with people who are living with dementia, and it is really fun. I'm really enjoying it. We've also started partnering in our community for dementia and family-friendly film series. So we've partnered with our library, the Alzheimer's Association, and our Kansas City Film Festival. And we've done almost a year of this film series, and we're going to do another year. And as Trin was saying, just a way to bring people in the community together to help reduce the stigma that people living with dementia often suffer with, of not seeing the person and just seeing the disease, and people are scared of the disease. So trying to reduce that fear so people can keep their relationships.
So how do you make people spontaneously laugh? I'm interested in that. You just tell a joke.
Try. Yeah, whatever it takes.
This program was started by MD, Dr. Madan Kataria in Mumbai, India, about 13 years ago. And he started it because his life was too serious. And he started just the way you described. He gathered some people and they told jokes every morning in a park. And that lasted for 1 week because the jokes ran out. And he established this land of laughter. And so he realized that if we could make ourselves laugh, our body would have all the benefits of spontaneous laughter. So when I interviewed him, I Skyped with him from Mumbai. And the first thing he said to me is, "Deborah, do you know the ha ha chorus?" I said, "No, Dr. Kataria, I don't." And he goes, "Ha ha 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 ha."
Ha, 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 ha. Now we do.
So that's a really simple way to make yourself laugh, is just do the ha ha chorus with any tune. You can say to yourself, "I'm going to laugh at every red light." You can set a timer. "I'm going to laugh for 1 minute." And then there's a whole series of different kind of laughter exercises that you can do. You can make a laughter milkshake where you're pretending you're pouring in milk and then you're ha, 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 shaking it and then you're drinking it, ha, ha, ha. So I love this laughter thing. I think it is just fantastic. Anybody can laugh. And there are people who work with advanced dementia who haven't laughed in years, and they're seeing laughter because hearing laughter makes us all want to laugh. So it's very exciting. And if you want more information, you can go to laughteryoga.org, and they've got lots of information
okay.
there.
Fantastic.
Great to do at home. Great to do at a family gathering.
Wonderful. That sounds great.
Sorry, I was muted. A lot of Alzheimer's patients that I see at the senior center, you know, they all come in with the same stone face on their expression on their face, and you never see them differently. You know, every muscle is like in the same place. Some guys have this like, you know, growl looking face, and I can't even imagine some of these people laughing, and that would be like really breaking the mold for them, and that's got to be good.
Well, it is good. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, it's the same as when I taught preschool age many, many years ago, and they would be at the door just crying, didn't want to go. The minute they turn into the doorway, they're happy. Now,
they're just children again.
They're little enough that they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know. They've already had to get dressed and eat food they didn't want to eat and ride in the car with the dog. And, you know, it's the same with a person who's at home struggling, and the caregiver who's at home is just trying to get the tasks done. And I think both what Deborah and I are promoting and sharing and what we do for people on an individual basis, as well as in group settings and in all the arenas that Deborah and I are in, is to remind that caregiver to find some joy in even those regular tasks so that they are not just all the way depleted. And when that person arrives at the center, hopefully if it's a good center, which many are, they know that they're going to be engaged for the day, and they're going to have a lot more fun in there than it looks like at the onset of walking in that door.
It's true.
I would hope that those caregivers at home could fill their own cups some more. Like I had some ideas of an orchestra setting at home. You're going to turn on the classical music. You're going to dress up. You're going to have that sparkling cider. You're going to have those hors d'oeuvres, and you're going to listen to Mozart. You're going to listen to Beethoven. You don't have to go out to do that. You can do that at home. You can create a cafe situation at your table, and you're going to have Mexican, you're going to have Italian. You're going to have some fun in these regular daily tasks instead of just feeling like I can't go out, she can't go out, we just have to stay home and it's going to be terribly sad. Let's have some fun with it. Travel from your armchair, you know, have some exciting adventure from going to these beautiful places online. The computer is an amazing thing these days. You can really go to Brazil. You can go to Ireland. You really feel as if you've been there if you are willing to create a little more attention around what you're doing at home. Just go have some more fun.
Well, I can't believe how fast this time has gone. Do you guys have any last tips you'd like to share about how to be a creative caregiver before we sign off?
I'll share a final thought, and that is just, as Trin was saying, to just have fun with it. You can't fail. It's a benefit to you as the caregiver. It's a benefit to the person living with dementia. And to just think about how do you want to be treated in your life, and to treat your beloved person that way, trying to allow them to have the most meaning, the deepest relationships, fun learning that you can all have together.
Yeah, that's so true. That's why it's so important to get them in a safe place so that you can not worry about safety and
safety
things like that.
Safety is paramount. You are so right.
I'm out.
So stay in touch with Deborah and I both online. We have lots of ideas and ways to share that. I have Deborah's book right here. Deborah, do you have your book? You wanted to flash it?
I'd love to flash. Let's flash it.
No so flashing on this show.
It's backwards. I know. It's backwards.
And it is
no, it looks good. I can see
it. No, it looks good.
It's an amazing resource for caregivers, for friends who don't know how to talk to their friends who are living with dementia, for professional caregivers. And Trin's book is the same way. It is also
a big book.
Amazing resource.
Here's my little showing of the cover of my book, 15 Minutes of Fame. And we just, I'm so glad to have found Deborah. I'm so glad to have met Dave online. And it's wonderful to keep sharing what we know through our social media and in person. I know we're both able to connect by email and by phone. So yes, please stay in touch with us and we'll stay in touch with you.
Why do you call it 15 Minutes of Fame? Curious.
15 Minutes of Fame. You know, I had a few different titles working and I was sitting at a mall with lots of people going by of all sorts, all ages, all types. And I thought, you know, everybody wants 15 minutes of fame in their lives. And what that means to me is being recognized for who you truly are. And so I felt it was important to put that in, to create in the caregiver's mind, if you create 15 minutes a day for the person you love, if it's to play their music, if it's to read them a story about their life, if it's to show them a photo of their adventures, think about it as a short, easy thing to do. And if you spend, then you add 15 minutes another day and you end up doing it for 5 hours a day, whatever's happening in your home, you want to be filling your own cup with stories and photos and enjoyment for both of you.
So you become the hero to your caree.
Yes.
And they become the hero too. I wanted to share one other thing. I have a blog I write every week called dementiajourney.org, where I feature creative people such as Trin and share ideas that for all kinds of care partners. I'd love to share that with any of your watchers who feel the need.
Thank you.
Well, you know, you guys have inspired me. You know, I go up there to my mother-in-law's house, 2 hours and 15-minute drive, one direction. And, you know, I don't like to drive because, you know, it hurts my back and stuff like that. But I go up when I can, which might be, you know, once a month, once every 2 months, because, you know, I've got my hands full down here with everything. But you've inspired me to make a commitment to try to get up there once a week because things are getting bad. And I think they're going to need me to make this happen. Otherwise, we're just going to keep talking about it. And a year from now, we're going to still be talking about it. And God forbid the house should burn down. And we were just talking about it. So thank you.
I love your commitment to keeping her safe. You know, one more thing is you can invite a friend to go with you on that drive. And one thing that happened for me when my mom was going through a real hard time, being very repetitive, and I took a friend with me to visit her. And afterwards she said, "Your mom is so interesting. She has so many good stories to tell."
Yeah, she's heard them for the first time.
Yeah.
It was just another way, and it helped me so much. So if you have somebody who will ride up there with you, it diffuses the energy and helps you, gives you some support too.
Yeah, I need to help her aunt, her niece, because she's, you know, we can't keep asking her to do these things. Her hands are full with her own parents, and that's where her responsibility is. And, you know, caregivers can make themselves feel guilty that they can't be everything to everybody, and that's just not right. I don't believe in guilt.
Good.
Or the wrong kind of guilt, anyway. Some people need to feel guilty about something.
I would like some email addresses.
Sure.
Yes. How do we get a hold of you?
Yeah. Mine is myinfo. It's M as in mother, Y, I, N as in Nancy, F as in Frank, O, myinfo@pobox.com.
P-O?
P-O like post office.
Post office box. I'd never heard of that one.
Me too.
Yeah, it's kind of an umbrella.
Okay.
And my email is my name, Trin Rose, TRYNROSE, @gmail.com. I used to have two or three emails. Forget it. One is enough. TrinRose @gmail.com. And my website is also called caregiverheart.com. It's where my book can be purchased as for Kindle or for Nook, or as a PDF that can be viewed simply on a computer. And as I say, Deborah and I are all over the web. You can find us there. We'd be really glad to keep giving you support.
Great.
We would. Thank you.
Adrian, how do we get a hold of you?
I meant the caregiver space, which it would be Adrienne, Adrienne, at thecaregiverspace.org. And that's the website and the Facebook pages.
Great.
Oh, like,
and I am the caregivers. What am I? Dave, the caregivers. I never
caregiver.
Write myself. Yeah.
Caregiver.
I have so many names. Probably the shortest one is caregiverscaregiver.com or DNASS. I never give my email out. But D like Dave, NASS, N-A-S-S, at att.net if somebody wants to email me. But they can contact me through the website as well. So thank you, guys. You've done an amazing job. What a fun show and how informative. And even I was affected and touched by this. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. You did a beautiful job, both of you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Now I don't have to compliment myself because you did it.
Well, it's a treasure to get to be in the presence of people who have the heart and really care about this subject.
I mean, we have a very large Alzheimer's community, and I would love
to. You have a page, right, Adrienne?
Of course.
Yeah.
And I just think that this is a whole new angle for the people who are on there.
Yeah.
Who were just like really worn out. Any new ideas for them would be wonderful.
Okay. And again, a reminder that all our live shows become recorded pod and video cast on our website, caregiverscaregiver.com, or if it's easy to remember, DaveTheCaregiver.com, whatever works in your brain. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout, if you don't already know. Just for doing that, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free at $10 value. It's still getting rave reviews, One Arm, One Leg, 100 Words, Overcoming Unbelievable Hardships, My Wife's Amazing Story. And Trin and Deborah and Adrienne, everyone listening, thank you again. Until next Wednesday at noon Pacific time, may God richly bless you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for joining Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show. Make sure you tune in every Wednesday at noon Pacific time and anytime afterwards on podcast to catch more of Dave and his tips to caregivers on avoiding burnout and surviving the grief process right here on the Worldwide Block Talk Radio Network. Goodbye.